Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello, Sue Bolton.
Hi, how's it going? Although one little correction, Northeastward.
Ah, Northeastward, yeah. I guess the kind of first question to ask is, you know, what is your kind of can you tell us about, you know, your election platform and, you know, what makes you distinct from the other councillors who are running in the ward?
Well, I'm running, as I did last time, on the slogan of community need, not developer greed. And I feel that that sums up our anti-corporate politics, that we think that governments, be it local council or state or federal, are too close, too supportive of corporations at the expense of ordinary people, ordinary working class people. And so that sort of has always summed up my approach to the role as a Socialist Alliance member and as a councillor. And also, we've been involved in the Moreland area since I've been on council in trying to, I guess, empower residents to raise their voice, because there's no way I could win anything in council as just one vote. Basically, everything that I have managed to achieve on council has been a result of community organisation, which then puts pressure on the bureaucracy and the councillors to really force them to acknowledge issues. And that doesn't mean I've won everything, but I have actually won quite a lot of things, considering I'm just one vote on council.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about some of these victories that you've had in the past? I guess you've been on council for 3 to 4 years, or...?
Since 2012.
Since 2012.
4 years the time of the election. And the sorts of things I guess I've managed to achieve. One was a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, when a big amount was chopped out of the climate budget on the night of the, I think it might have been 2013 or 2014, there was a big chop made into the climate budget, and it was a fairly spontaneous motion moved by a particular councillor that a majority of councillors voted for. And I proposed at a public meeting of Community Action Moreland that there be a protest. Normally, they were only planning to send a letter expressing their disappointment with the Moreland Council decision, and I thought that just wasn't really sufficient. So I proposed an actual protest with a view to trying to overturn that decision or change that decision or in some way at the following council meeting. And I think that was important because there was a protest accompanied by lots of emails and phone calls and so forth to various councillors. And that did result in that meeting. I mean, it couldn't totally overturn the budget, but actually passing a motion for the money to be put back into the climate budget at the mid-year, you know, financial review. So that was actually a big victory. And, you know, some of the other councils say, oh, the protests and so forth didn't have anything to do with it. But there's no way that they would have passed a motion to reinstate that money so quickly if it wasn't for community opposition and community organisation. Then there was the issue of the respite service for parents of kids with disabilities. And that was a decision which had been taken by councillors at the end of 2015. And because it was all in confidential business, the community didn't know. And it wasn't until suddenly the community and the carers got a letter on the same day, on the day the cuts were due to start, that they realised what had happened. And that was something where I worked with parents and also with the union, the Australian Services Union, but especially with parents. And we had to try and find a way of making contact with parents, because a lot of these parents are really stressed from, you know, working full-time, caring for family members with disabilities, as well as caring for other family members. And, you know, this is a group of parents who are absolutely exhausted and don't really have energy left for extra political campaigning in addition to negotiating with services on behalf of their family members, etc. But we managed to gain some publicity, make contact with other parents, and to prove that it wasn't just a couple of parents who were whinging, but a generalised problem and issue. And I think we shamed the council into overturning the cut to respite care. So, I mean, those are just two examples, and there's some other examples as well, but I think those are two examples. And, you know, the whole council is such a bureaucratic institution and a lot of bureaucratic processes, which are very difficult to negotiate. But it's the only way you can cut through all of that is with resonance campaigning.
Yeah. Does Zane and Bronte have any questions they'd like to ask?
Yeah, so I was just keen to ask, what are some examples of ongoing campaigns that you've kind of been working on for the last few years, but which would be good to get re-elected to council so you can keep pushing on those fronts?
Well, I mean, there's certain issues which haven't finished, so that, for instance, one of the issues that I've been involved in for quite a few years now was the issue of the Ballat Murup, which is an Aboriginal school site, and I was involved in 2010 when the government was threatening to shut down the school, and there were big protests to try and keep the school open, and, you know, the school gym was occupied for about 10 months. And, you know, unfortunately we lost that battle, the school was closed, but then we began a campaign to win the site back as a First Nations community hub. And I think me getting elected to council at that point was really important, because I've been able to consistently push that issue through council. And that's actually given gave the local activists strength in their campaign. That was really important, to get those motions through council. But then those First Nations community members also kept the pressure on council, and then we managed to get the Wurundjeri on board, and we've managed to stave off the sale of the land for now. The state government has been pressuring Moreton Council to agree to the land being sold. So far that hasn't happened, and there's a feasibility study being done to create a First Nations community hub, and there's a lot of confidence that that will happen, that the site won't get sold off. But that's not a finished struggle. There's still a number of phases that have to be gone through, and at various points Moreland Council has looked a bit wobbly at the knees on the issue, but we've been through a combination of me being on council and the activists outside of council, we've managed to maintain the council support for that campaign. I mean, that's certainly one thing. I think this issue of the respite care, I think, isn't finally resolved, because while we've managed to win back this service, there are big changes afoot with the federal government planning to take over the service and just leave people with disabilities to the National Disability Insurance Scheme, take over the remainder of the service, use it just for elderly people, but fully outsource it which is also how the NDIS will work as a fully outsourced scheme. And I think I'm totally opposed to this kind of outsourcing. We've seen what outsourcing does with TAFEs, where this outsourcing to, you know, private training organisations has actually absolutely gutted our public TAFE services. And that's been absolutely disastrous experience. And I think this will be the experience with aged care and disability care. And there's sort of a range of other issues as well in terms of also trying to fight for council to take genuine climate action measures, not just window dressing. There is a lot of, you know, at the level of local government and federal and state government, there's a lot of window dressing on a lot of issues. There's a lot of perception of, you know, there's a lot of a big perception that Moreland is a progressive council, and it probably is compared to a lot of other councils. But there is an awful lot of superficiality of, you know, just talking about multiculturalism and diversity without necessarily giving people rights and without actually taking a stand against racism. And then there can be a lot of discussion about, you know, being a climate leader because they've got this certificate of carbon, that it's a carbon neutral council. But that carbon neutrality is on the basis of using gas as a transition fuel in the leisure centres and buying carbon offsets. When, you know, I favour a push for 100% renewable energy and steps to be taken in that direction rather than this giving any support to carbon trading, or sorry, carbon offsets industry, which I think is just cheating. It's not genuine reduction of emissions, but actually cheating. So there's a range of projects that I'm certainly keen to be involved in and keen to continue if I get re-elected.
I guess the last sort of question before we round out is, I think you've sort of talked about this already sort of indirectly, but I kind of want to sort of ask a question about, you know, as since you're as a socialist, how does your political positions as a socialist inform, you know, the work that you do on a council? And, you know, I think on one of your election leaflets, there was also a statement on why you were a socialist and how this sort of council position kind of like informs those beliefs.
Well, I think as a socialist, you have to recognise that ordinary people should run society. It shouldn't be run, society shouldn't be run on their behalf by unelected bureaucrats or by politicians. It should be run by them. Now, at the moment, we're stuck with the sort of electoral system that we've got. So I think as a socialist, you have to put people first. And I think I see my role as being a little bit like a union delegate. That doesn't mean other councillors see their role as being like that. But I think as a union delegate, you have to, okay, there's certain issues where you might go and advocate on a particular issue, but really the best form of action is organising people to stand up for themselves and helping people gain the confidence to organise themselves and speak up for themselves. So they're not just speaking through an elected councillor, but they're actually putting their own voices forward. And I think that's the most important, because a community that's organised is a community that can't just be pushed around by governments or corporations. And so I've put most of my energies in that direction, of rather than being on lots and lots of committees and so forth, that I've sort of tried to, you know, help people get organised, so that, say, if people come to me with a particular issue, and especially if it's an issue that affects more than just them, encouraging people to take up a petition, chat to their neighbours, maybe organise a community meeting, which I can help with, come to a council meeting and raise their issues, because then they get to eyeball the councillors directly and also the council bureaucrats, but also there are other members of the community there who get a chance to hear about your issue, and so it's a way of sort of building support or interest from other members of the community, and you know, there might be a protest or, you know, public meeting or other forms of activity. But it's basically, I think, the critical thing is for people to be able to have their own voice, not just via someone like me. Mm. And then I think other critical things to watch are things like privatisation and outsourcing. Now, a lot of these things are done in fairly sneaky ways, in the same way that the privatisation and transfer of public housing has occurred in this state under both Liberal and Labor governments. So some of it's been just sold off and some of it has been transferred to not-for-profit housing associations under the guise of social housing. So there are a lot of sneaky ways in which things can happen, or that you'll, you know, things will be put to you in a way that you'll only get this service if you agree to this cut and so forth. Mm. So there are thousands sort of ties and a thousand threads sort of trying to pull you in a very neoliberal direction. So you have to be very, very aware of that and try and fight against that and try and fight against any kind of trade-off mentality.
I think we're beginning a bit over time. Sorry to interrupt you, Sue. We're going a bit over time. But is there like a website or something that you could refer to that we can to help for listeners to get maybe involved in or find out more about your campaign?
Yeah, so I've got a website which is www.suebolton4morland.com.
Great. All right. Thank you very much, Sue, and thank you very much for the interview. Have a great day.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.